You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It never is, but especially not on a Wisdom Wednesday where free agency starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time today. That obviously is laughable. I honestly don't even have any idea why they even have this negotiating period ahead of time. It's basically the start of free agency. I mean, what are we even doing now? But that's the way the NFL does it. Very excited for you guys to hear from Sam Munson. Does a terrific job for Pro Football Focus. Want to get some of his thoughts on takeaways from the season that was in the NFL. And that'll be right before I let you guys know about all the big moves that have been made so far. I'm not sure, by the way, whether the last show this week with Greg Cosell, which should be a good one, Greg's talking wide receivers. I'm not sure if we're going to post it on Thursday or Friday. I may wait till Friday to kind of get more of the free agent moves in. We'll just have to see. So keep posted for when we have the last show this week. Love those of you that rate and review the show. That's almost an automatic chance to get a winner and get a signed press pass from me, especially those of you that follow on social media, at Ross Tucker NFL, at Ross Tucker Pod. It makes a huge difference for us. Patron of the day is Joe Mars. Patreon.com/RT Media. Join the family. It's Big Show time.
The Big Show.
Well, I feel like I bring you on, Sam, about once a year here in the off season because it's such a good time to talk with you and kind of recap what we saw from the season that was in the NFL. I have some specific questions for you, but I guess I'd rather start by kind of giving you a blank slate. When you look back on the 2023 NFL season, what kind of jumps out to you from a schematic standpoint? Like, what's the overwhelming trend, perhaps, that you noticed this year, or at least one of them?
I mean, I think the narrative all season was that this was a year where defenses were fighting back for the first time in a long time. We'd seen this endless progression of offense and just the numbers going up and up and up and scoring and passing and all those kinds of things. And for the first time, defenses started to fight back, and that left everybody going, why aren't the Chiefs really the Chiefs this year, you know? Or why is every offense seeming to struggle? Because defenses started to actually combat them as well. So I think it's a good thing for football that for the first time in years, we actually saw defenses like get on the front foot, start attacking again, start coming after offenses and really causing them problems again.
And what did they do? Like what was it schematically that had them? The success.
I think there were a few different ways of doing it. A few different schemes had success, but the common theme throughout them all, I think, was misdirection and sort of disguise, right? Whether it's rotating safeties and that kind of thing. It's not like that's a new development, right. But tying it all together and disguising pressure and making every offense in the NFL think about more than one thing post-snap, pre-snap to post-snap, not just look, get a read in the defense, know where we're going with the ball, have to check it again, and then have to check something else at the same time and just slow down the timing and the progression that an offense wants to go through.
One of the other things that's jumped out to me, and I don't have any data, you guys are the data guys, does not feel like there were as many explosive plays this year.
Right, absolutely.
When you think about like long bombs or long runs, I know there were still a bunch, but I don't really remember that many of them. Certainly not like we had seen in recent years. Obviously, the Dolphins got a bunch with the speed that they have. And a lot of that's because it also feels like red zone defenses are better than they've ever been.
Yeah.
So let's start with the first thing, the lack of explosive plays. I almost think that what you guys have done over the years at Pro Football Focus has contributed to this in the sense that it's like the first time teams are realizing, boy, you'd rather let the team run on you than give up explosive plays. They finally have trusted the data, Sam. You think it's fair to say that, like, nobody likes the other team getting 6 yards a carry or five yards a carry? It's painful, but
it's better than a 48-yard pass.
I think we're in a world now where, for the first time, somebody making that argument in a meeting room doesn't get just laughed out of the room.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody says, look, hear me out. We are better off in this game if we give up 5 yards of carry on the ground, right? Because that is going to lead them to running the ball all day, and they're not going to target Tyreek Hill deep down the field. You know, something like that. There are definitely games that have happened in the last couple of years where a team has got in with a defensive game plan to have a light box all day long and essentially invite them to run the ball. Maybe, as you said, they don't want to give up 6 yards of carry.
Right.
You know, they don't want to get absolutely wrecked. But the game plan is to keep the ball on the ground and at least have them successful enough that they keep doing it and stay away from those explosive plays. I think you're right. That's another trend that defenses have absolutely focused on. Let's make sure we don't give up a giant play at any point.
So what I'm confused about then, I guess, Sam, is it feels like the not giving up the explosive plays started with kind of Vic Fangio.
Right.
And playing a lot of four deep, quarters coverage, split safeties, which is the idea is it's harder to get big plays against two deep safeties than one deep safety, right? So we all know that. What's weird, though, is it feels like Fangio defenses didn't have as much success as anticipated. So here you're saying defenses are fighting back, defenses are giving up the explosive plays, and I think the father, maybe, or grandfather of not giving up the explosive plays is the Vic Fangio style defense, and yet it felt like with Desai and Philly, maybe even Fangio in Miami, maybe there's a thought, especially, you know, I live outside of Philadelphia, there's a concern with the Eagles hiring him as defensive coordinator that offenses have figured out the Fangio style defense. So how do you juxtapose those two?
Yeah, I mean, so number one, I think Fangio is still the best exponent of the Fangio style of defense. There's a difference between getting a Fangio disciple, you know, a guy that was brought up in that system, and the godfather of the system, right?
Right.
So I think the Eagles are still in a good position bringing him in. I do think it's interesting that all of those Shanahan offenses, one of the sort of defining characteristics of all those guys is they lived on the other side of the ball as well. They don't just know offense. They didn't just stay on offense for the entire time. They were defensive guys at some point. Bobby Slowick, before he worked at PFF, he was a linebacker's assistant linebackers coach for Washington. And then when he worked with us, he didn't want to comment on offensive stuff. He's like, I'm a defensive, you know, guy. I don't really know what they're doing on the offensive side. I don't want to, you know, stake a claim on that stuff. And then when he went to San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan, he's like, okay, now's the time. We're going to bring you to the offensive side. And that's, you know, he's an offensive coordinator now and doing an incredible job. But they've lived on the other side, and they understand what causes their offense problems. And almost all of those guys gravitated towards a Vic Fangio defense because that was the system that was causing their offense the most problems. They were destroying, you know, the Pete Carroll style of defense, those cover three, cover one systems. But the Fangio defense was causing them problems. So, I mean, Mike McDaniel went and hired Fangio. They all went and found a Fangio style of defense to practice against, to make their offense even better. But I think the downside of that is it's made that defensive scheme a little bit less effective because the current sort of best offensive scheme in the NFL has been sharpening its blade against the scheme that was causing them problems, which has made it a bit less effective.
Is there anything specific you've noticed that the offenses have done to the Fangio scheme that enabled them to have some more success?
Not really. I think generally, though, the Fangio scheme uses a little bit less of that disguise and confusion. So once you've practiced against it for long enough, you understand where the voids are and when,
right,
where the gaps are in exactly the same way as they did when they were, you know, causing those Seahawks defenses so many problems.
So interesting because it does feel like, certainly on offense, I say it all the time, if you're not at least interviewing for offensive coordinator or head coach, guys from the, let's call it the Shanahan tree, you're missing out.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you have to hire them, but you look at, you know, Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins obviously led the NFL in yards. McVay, I mean, think about the value that he creates, Sam, getting that kind of production out of fifth-round picks like Kyren Williams and Puka Nacua. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
We know... Kyle Shanahan and what the Niners were able to do again this year. Even Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. You referenced earlier Bobby Slowick. I mean, I think that's why another PFF guy, Zach Robinson,
right,
got the offensive coordinator gig with the Falcons because he was kind of thought of, and I said this maybe on the show when he got hired by Atlanta. I was on the sideline for the Lions-Rams playoff game, and it was very clear that Zach Robinson was Stafford's guy. You know, like Stafford would come off, he would go right to Zach Robinson, and those were the guys talking, those were the guys doing it. And so I think that's why Zach Robinson obviously got this opportunity that he got now. It's got to be some of a sense of pride for you guys, too, that these PFF guys are getting these big jobs.
It's very cool. I mean, both of those guys held effectively the same kind of position at PFF that me and Steve did. They were senior analysts. They were the guys kind of putting the final say on specific plays, specific grades, the review-level analysts, the guys that could go through and sort of check the differences between two graders and make a final call. You know, we all sort of sat in meetings with them. We sat in calls with them. We had fun with them doing content stuff. And now each one of them is calling plays, you know, in the NFL for a franchise. It's awesome to see.
So cool. What is it about that scheme? I try to tell my listeners about it, but what is it about what Shanahan does that with that style that makes him so successful?
I think it is that melding of everything that we talked about before. They haven't just spent time on offense and defense, but they've also understood the run game as well and tying it all together. It's not just we're going to have a pass system, we're going to have a run system, and they don't really have a ton in common other than they look similar pre-snap. The whole offense is designed around tying everything together and understanding the impact it has in every aspect. I mean, Mike McDaniel talked about the reason he developed to the way he was is he looked at all these guys under Kyle Shanahan, you know, LaFleur and Sean McVay, and he's like, if my voice is ever going to be heard, I need to go and learn the run game and learn under Forster and sort of develop that side of it so that I have this total picture, and now I can be listened to. My voice will be heard as well. So I think that's the strength of that offense, is that it's all one holistic picture that causes defense problems because you don't know what you're looking at. They understand what they're doing to you, but you have to try and diagnose, is this even a run or a pass? What are we defending? How many different things are we trying to take away in any given play? And it paralyzes defenses. They can't attack the way that they are with every other offense because they have to wait and hesitate and figure out what the offense is doing.
I've probably told you this before, but I've definitely said it to my listeners, I've had guys at every position one-on-one say to me that the Shanahan offense is perfect for their position.
Right.
Like, I think Owen Daniels told me that when he was playing tight end. Eric Winston, when he was playing tackle for the Texans.
Yeah.
Sage Rosenfels says it's by far the best offense. Obviously running backs. Obviously wide receivers because he's, you know, Andre Johnson, Julio Jones. So my running joke is, if a guy at every position thinks the offense is the best offense they've ever been in for their position, that's probably a pretty good offense.
Like, yeah.
That's probably what other people should be doing.
And the offensive line thing is a really big one. Nobody mentions that when it comes to Shanahan's offense. You know, everyone obviously notices that, hey, any quarterback that plays in Shanahan's offense is going to have a career year, right? Immediately. Like, he got Brian Hoyer looking like a superstar back in Cleveland, leading the league in categories. It's crazy. And we know that it has a corresponding effect on receivers or running backs. But when you look at PFF grades, like every offensive tackle that plays in that system has a career year. Guys that, you know, aren't necessarily seen as top-tier tackles, suddenly they get a PFF grade of 85. They look like a superstar because that offense, it removes a whole bunch of plays where they're not having to pass block or make the difficult
1,000%. And I tell people that all the time. You know, for most offensive linemen, the toughest thing is going to be one-on-one pass protection in obvious passing situations, right? Like, that's most of them. And that was certainly mine. Man, you watch some of these guys, the amount of play action they have, the amount of boots and nakeds. So first of all, as an offensive lineman, it's almost impossible to get a minus on a boot or a naked, right? Like, you're basically running to the left, but also, or running whichever direction. But also, that's an opportunity to, like, try different things and try to throw guys off the scent. You know what I mean? Like, run it like it's a run play. Show it like it's a hard zone. You know, do those type of things. And I think people lose sight of that. You know, it's funny. He doesn't have any background, to my knowledge, with the Shanahan scheme. But when I watch the Detroit Lions and Ben Johnson, I think this guy is like a Shanahan McVay type because it's so much. I mean, I think they run play action every first down.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
And then the other thing about those offenses is, even forgetting the fact that they're sort of, they're using those types of plays that make life easier on offenses or on offensive linemen, the offense generally is so successful that they are just reducing the number of those third and 11 plays, you know, the obvious passing situations that tackles have to protect in the first place. So they're so successful that they're just not exposing the linemen to those tough situations.
It really is interesting. Anything else jump out? You said defense is fought back this year. Anything else jump out to you from this season?
No, I think that's the big one. The other one was that this was a strange year in terms of, you know, whether it was MVP or any of the big awards, where we didn't have these kind of clear, like most years you get, and we decide MVP by like week six, you know, it's like, ah, look, this is the runaway winner this year. This year, every time somebody emerges, that guy, they had like a disqualifying game the next game and it became somebody else. It was just this weird knock-on game where we could never decide any award for the entire season.
You know, it's funny. The last question, the Eagles, like, because you just brought that up and I was thinking Jalen Hurts was the MVP favorite.
Right.
Like in late November maybe. I don't know if I've ever seen a team collapse like that.
Amazing.
And have no answer for the blitz, which hadn't been an issue for them the last season and a half for her. How does that happen all of a sudden where the blitz is something they can't stop?
That was such a strange outcome. I mean, people were calling for Nick Sirianni's job after the season, a guy that was in the Super Bowl the year before.
Yeah.
And normally when that happens, you're like, look, this is just the world we live in right now. You know, it's what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. The guy took the team to the Super Bowl a year ago. On the other hand, you're looking at it saying this collapse was so complete and total and nothing stopped it. No change was able to do anything except accelerate the tailspin.
Yeah.
That is a pretty bad indictment for the head coach that he wasn't able to affect that at all. And if anything, you know, changes that he did make, like handing the defense over to Matt Patricia, only made it worse. So I think you're right. I can't remember a team just completely falling into a tailspin the way they did.
Check him out on social media, at PFF Sam. Absolutely love every time Sam Munson comes on the show. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Love talking with Sam. Love talking with the Pro Football Focus guys. Love eating DiGiorno pizza. They know it's not easy to plan any type of watch party. We got the draft coming up next month. You need the perfect setting, the perfect squad, the perfect eats. Luckily, like me, you're a game time mastermind. And you know that grabbing DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza can bring home a dub because it's packed with half a pound cheese sauce, other toppings, comes at an incredible price. Make the game-winning call and grab a DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza from the grocery store today. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno. You know what else it's not? It's not beer. That's Labatt Blue Light, which is delicious. And those of you that check out my Instagram, especially at Ross Tucker NFL, you know I've been on a pretty good run lately of skiing and drinking beer and loving Labatt Blue Light wherever they have them. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Ducks Takes.
All right, Ross, let's get your thoughts on free agency so far. We'll go position by position, starting with the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I don't really know that there's another efficient way to do it. Obviously, Baker Mayfield going back to the Bucs, we're not surprised. Gardner Minshew with the Raiders is interesting. You know, it kind of feels like the Raiders would have rather had Gardner Minshew than Luke Getsy, which is, than Justin Fields, which is interesting. From a Luke Getsy standpoint, who's the new OC out there with the Raiders, as well as their head coach, Antonio Pierce, almost like they preferred Minshew over Justin Fields. And then Russell Wilson with the Steelers, fascinating for the minimum. I do think that Russell Wilson will end up winning that starting job. Makes perfect sense to me for the Steelers. They get him for the minimum. The Broncos will be on the hook for over $37 million. The big one, though, is Kirk Cousins signing a four-year, $180 million deal with the Falcons. $90 million fully guaranteed at signing. I love the fact that Kirk Cousins keeps winning. But the reality is, if Kirk Cousins played for the Falcons last year, Arthur Smith would still be their head coach, and they would have won that division and maybe a playoff game like the Bucs did. But he wasn't. They had bad quarterback play, and now Arthur Smith's the OC in Pittsburgh. Yeah, the thing that's interesting to me, Jacoby Brissett, by the way, is signed with the Patriots. Not a huge surprise there. There's other backups that have signed that are not as significant. What I think is significant is the Vikings have basically replaced Kirk Cousins with Sam Darnold. That is a big drop-off. And I think that the Vikings are really living dangerously here a little bit, because this could greatly affect Justin Jefferson. You have the best wide receiver in the NFL. He's going to want a good quarterback. And you letting Kirk Cousins go now might be a big reason why you don't get Justin Jefferson back. It wasn't just a one-for-one thing.
What about the running backs? They had a big week.
Oh, my gosh, Jack. You said it, man. It shows you, and we'll talk about this. We've already have on the College Draft Podcast, but we'll talk about it with Greg next week on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Not a great draft for running backs. So all of them are switching these teams. All guys. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles. I mean, top five O-line, top five receiving duo, arguably top five quarterback. He had bottom five in all those categories for the Giants. I will say this, Josh Jacobs to the Packers is interesting. Derrick Henry with the Ravens. Not huge money, but $9 million guaranteed for this year. Excited to see some of these guys. Henry with the Ravens. You also had Pollard with the Titans. Aaron Jones leaves the Packers to go to the Vikings. I'm surprised. I think the one that stands out to me is you see what DeAndre Swift got from the Bears. I'm surprised Eckler got such little money. 2 years, $8.4 million for Eckler. Eckler's been such a good player and never made big money.
What about the wide receivers?
It's been kind of quiet, right? Michael Pittman Jr. on the franchise tag re-signed. Gabe Davis to the Jags. Darnell Mooney gets basically the same deal to the Falcons. But Calvin Ridley's still out there. Going to make a decision soon. Hollywood Brown, Curtis Samuel, Tyler Boyd. I think part of that is because there's so many good receivers in the draft. The Patriots did bring back Kendrick Bourne.
Wrapping up skill positions, what about tight ends?
We knew about Dalton Schultz, but a bunch of tight ends are starting to go off the board, right? I mean, Hunter Henry back with the Patriots. The Bengals bringing in Mike Gesicki. The Dolphins get Jonnu Smith. Gerald Everett signs with the Bears. Colby Parkinson, pretty decent deal there with the Rams. Those are the big ones, I think, Jack.
You were born 20 years too late for this one. What about the offensive line?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, offensive tackles, you know, Jermaine Illuminor signed with the Giants, but the offensive tackles, that market's been a little slow. Again, guess why? Because it's a good draft for offensive tackles. You know, that's why Tyron Smith hasn't signed. Jonah Williams hasn't signed. Interior offensive linemen, these guards, this is nuts. This is crazy. Jack, this is the exact opposite of what they thought about guards and centers when I was playing. Why they realize now how valuable we are? I mean, you could look at them, $100 million for Robert Hunt. Landon Dickerson gets a $21 million a year. I mean, it is wild, the money going on right now for interior linemen, especially guards.
What about the edge rushers?
Well, the big one is Brian Burns being traded from the Panthers to the Giants. The Panthers had an offer before for two first-round picks and a second-round pick, and they turned it down. And now you trade him for this? I mean, you know, Tepper is supposed to be like a hedge fund guy. Aren't you supposed to like buy low and sell high instead of the opposite? Jonathan Grenard going to the Vikings. He switched teams. Jonathan Grenard and Danielle Hunter did a wife swap of teams. Bryce Huff to the Eagles is very interesting to me because limited sample size, he was highly productive this past year.
What about the interior defensive linemen?
We knew about Chris Jones and Madubuike. Christian Wilkins, I thought, was arguably the best free agent available. That's a huge move by the Raiders. The Seahawks bring back Leonard Williams. Those are the big ones. Grover Stewart is back with the Colts as well.
And what about the back seven, the linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties?
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on there. It's interesting because at linebacker, the big one to me is Patrick Queen signing with the Steelers. I mean, that is crazy. He's dead to me. He's dead to us. That's the one that probably jumps out the most. I think Frankie Louvu is a really good player signing with the Commanders as well. Then you have the guys at corner, Jalen Johnson, we knew about Kenny Moore, the nickel, but the corner market's been a little bit quiet so far. The safeties, there's a lot out there. Chin signed with the Commanders. The bell of the ball was Xavier McKinney getting an absolutely gigantic deal from the Packers. Remember, next week I'll go over free agency a little bit more team by team. So if I miss somebody today, we'll get to them either Friday or next week. Other than that, I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out myfrontpagestory.com. Man, I love, love, love sending you guys signed stuff. I guarantee to send you something signed as long as you order a story for a loved one at myfrontpagestory.com. You will never regret. They will tell you it's the best gift they've ever gotten. Anniversary, birthday, whatever. What else do we got? We got Pizza Boy Brewing. We got Sporticulture, HumanHeadNYC.com, SteakhouseSports.com, BackOfficeScheduler.com.